relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Portions of the following program may contain pre-recorded material.
This is America First, and here's your host, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
Welcome, dear friends, to America First One-on-One, where we get to sit down with the guests you want to hear from for more than just 180 seconds, one of those TV hits for 3 minutes. This is long-form radio, so we can get to the bottom of the issues that we face as a republic. And I'm going to do something a little bit different today for our very special in-studio guest. I'm going to begin, because it's the right cut to play, with the audio cut we always end the show with every Friday. John, play cuts.
We will not bend. We will not break. We will not yield. We will never give in. We will never give up. We will never back down. We will never, ever surrender. My fellow Americans, our movement is far from over. In fact, our fight has only just begun.
Our fight, my fellow Americans, says the president, has only just begun. I play that because I want to instill in the millions of our listeners and viewers across this nation hope for the future. We are still reeling. We are still smarting from the events of last November. But we don't give up. Why? Because it is un-American to give up. One person who lives that attitude every single day, who actually has, as far as I'm concerned, press secretary, easy peasy. Sorry, Sean, that's easy. President, that's tough. Second hardest job in America, chief of staff to the incumbent. And that man is with us in studio right now, former congressman for the 11th District of North Carolina, Mark Meadows. Welcome to One on One.
Well, it's great to be with you, Sebastian. Thank you for always bringing the truth, for allowing those who are tuned in right now to actually see this. So I'm going to give you something that you've not heard anywhere else. That clip that you just played of President Trump talking about how the fight will continue, that was not just done by a speechwriter. I was there when he actually had his speechwriter bring in, and as he typically does, takes his big black sharpie, as you know, and started marking through. He says, you know, well, we need to be stronger here. We need to. And so what you just heard from the president of the United States was actually the president making those remarks coming from his heart. Yeah. And so I don't know if anybody's ever told you that or not, but I can tell you that happened.
I know his speech writers. Superb. Yeah. The two guys who wrote his speeches, some of the very, very best. They worked for his former Speaker of the House. I think you can guess who that is. But yes, that big black Sharpie pen comes out and you pay attention to what that man does. It's like Ronald Reagan on his way to the Berlin Wall. The State Department tried 7 times. Yes. Look it up 7 times to remove the phrase, tear down this wall, in the Beast, on the way to the Brandenburg Gate. Ronald Reagan takes out his pen and hand inserts that line again. It's in the Reagan Library. You can see his writing on the speech. Well, you know, it's called the swamp. Mark, so superb to have you commit to come on here one-on-one with us for a whole hour. Let's start at the beginning. Where did you come from? Tell us about your family, your upbringing, how you came to represent North Carolina's 11th district. And then the thing that, you know, I'm so curious of living where I do in the swamp, how hard a decision was it to leave your representative role and be the man who makes the trains run on time inside the White House. Well, that's tough.
It was real tough. I mean, I love and still do love the people of North Carolina, but being a member of Congress was never on my bucket list. You know, I was a business guy, and I was the guy that actually supported the good candidates and quite frankly got discouraged because you'd support good candidates. They'd go up to Washington, D.C. They'd come across that river. They'd get Potomac fever, lose their ever-loving mind. And so it was really a concern out of, you know, really at that point, people were losing their homes. It was, you know, 2010, 11. You know, we'd gone through all of the Obama mess. He was still in the office. And so I said, well, we've got to return America back to its rightful owner. And so you know, we prayed about it, talked about it with my wife, and decided to leave a very lucrative business in Western North Carolina.
What business?
You know, I was in the real estate business, so I've
a certain Manhattan billionaire.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that because we've shared so many stories. The president and I was just talking to him the other day, and we were talking about real estate and development and some of the stories. He could share a little part of a story, and I would pick up on it immediately, whether I was in Congress or working for him as the chief of staff. It was one of those things where other people would they get confused, and we would sit there laughing about, you know, here's how you do this, here's how you do that, and whether it is policy in D.C. or really about real estate transactions in New York or North Carolina, the President Trump is all about making sure you get things done. And so I other than that, I'm just a nobody from nowhere. You know, grew up with humble beginnings, truly. My parents, you know, worked hard to make sure that we always had food on the table, and we did. And yet at the same time, you know, there was not a silver spoon or any kind of connection that would bring me to Congress, and certainly not to the Oval Office. It was.
So when you get that phone call, you're a well-known fighter for freedom on Capitol Hill, Freedom Caucus. Walk us through that moment when the 45th president says, Mark, I need you as chief of staff.
Well, we had a number of conversations. And as you know, when he was going through some of the impeachment and the Russia hoax thing, there were very few people willing to stand up. I can tell you, my good friend Jim Jordan and I, along with Devin Nunes and a few others, it was very quiet. So I got to the point where, as a member of Congress, I would talk to the president almost daily. I mean, he'd call and he'd said, you know, Mark, you know, you guys got to keep fighting because nobody else is willing to fight. And he knew it was false. We knew it was false. Let me tell you who else knew it false. Adam Schiff knew it was false, and yet he continued every single day to go on TV and all the Sunday shows. And you talk about a big lie. That's the big lie that was perpetrated on the American people.
Let me share a story that I think I've mentioned on the show, but just to illustrate what Mark's talking about, how I knew it was all garbage. I was in the Oval. It was just the president and I. Very early on in the administration, I was there on a purely national security issue. I believe it was to do with North Korea at the time, if I remember well, and the missile launches. And we're in the conversation. It stops. I'm waiting for the president to make a decision on something. Room goes quiet, and then out of nowhere, I think it was the day that his son-in-law did a press shower, a little spray outside the West Wing on the Russia accusations.
Right.
And so I think that must have triggered the president. And then out of nowhere, he says, they won't find anything. No, he was angry. He said, they won't find anything because there is nothing. And he was angry because he knew the whole thing was a fabrication, Mark.
Oh, well, listen, I talk about this in a book I've got coming out. He called me when I was a member of Congress. He said, Mark, your wife has had more interactions with Russia than I have. I promise you that. There is nothing to be found. He says, go out there and fight. I still remember where I was seated at that particular time. He was on a trip abroad. And when you look at this, you start to see that the swamp continues to fight back even today. You know, even last week, trying to fight back, going after President Trump and those that...
They never stop, do they?
No, they never stop. Why? Because they're threatened by him and all that he stands for. And it's not his power. It's the power of the people that are tuned in right now, the American people.
Yeah, there's a very good reason why you unperson somebody with 91 million followers on Twitter. It's because you're afraid of him. There's a reason why they're afraid of him, because, and this is why they have to destroy him, and that's why they're trying to do it with anybody who supports him, because nobody owns him. It's very simple math. If you're not owned by the unions, if you're not owned by oil, big tech, pharma, you are a threat because you can't be bought. And that's the nature of the man that we worked for. I'm glad you mentioned your book. It's out very soon. You can pre-order it right now. It's The Chief's Chief. We will discuss. Everybody has to order it, but we're going to discuss a little bit of flavor of what it means to be chief of staff to the most powerful man in the world. He is now a senior partner at CPI. You can check them out at cpi.org. And of course, follow Mark at Mark Meadows on Twitter. This is One-on-One. If you enjoy, this is long-form radio. It's the spirit of my great mentor, John Batchelor. If you enjoy this, then please subscribe to the podcast. You'll never miss any of them, including the first one we launched with President Trump a few months ago. Just look for America First, my name, wherever you get your podcasts, and you will be able to catch every single one. Also, the live streaming for this show across the nation is at the First Amendment alternative to those fascists at YouTube. It is rumble.com/Seb Gorka. That is rumble.com/Seb Gorka. We'll be back with Mark Meadows after these messages. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First, and we are coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor. Pain relief that works, pain relief that's real, pain relief that's liberating tens of thousands of Americans across the country from their daily pain, me included. Yes, I had a low back pain issue that plagued me for 9 years, almost a decade, and I'm still pain-free after more than 2.5 years of taking Relief Factor. But it's not just me. It's Americans like Leah from Ohio. This is Leah's story. One Sunday morning, I sat on my couch in so much pain I was in tears. That's the day I ordered Relief Factor. Following directions, in 8 days, I found relief only to get better and better. I'm a believer 100%. That should be your story. It could be your story. Find out today. There's only one way, but it's super easy. Order the 3-week quick starter pack at ReliefFactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening just like I do. And I promise you, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for Leah, me, and thousands of your fellow Americans. Don't wait any longer. You know it makes sense. Call today, 800-500-8384, or go to ReliefFactor.com. That number again, 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com.
On the side of the U.S. Constitution, America First.
Welcome back to One-on-One with former Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. All right, I want everybody to get the book, Mark. Give us a little glimpse, though, of my formula is this. For a good Chief of Staff, you got to have three things.
Yeah.
Number one, you got to be totally simpatico with the boss. You got to have that relationship that just totally clicks day one. You've clearly got that. On top of that, you've really got to know how the swamp works. You know that. And then third, and this is where I think you're probably a little bit too much of a nice guy. You got to be a killer. Talk to us about what it's like inside the sausage factory, the mechanisms of being a chief of staff for this president.
Well, you do have to be a killer, but you also have to make sure that if there is bad news, that you're the one that actually gives it to the president. Right. But the other part of it, if something good happens, the president did it. If something bad happens, I did it. I mean, I'm just telling you.
That's the way it works.
Yeah, that's the way it works. And what people, you know, some of these books that have come out have been less than flattering with me. And so about me, but because what they've seen is I was willing to push on the president's behalf, his agenda, and we weren't going to let anybody, including some in the West Wing, stand in the way of getting it done. Now, listen, you know this better than most because you know him well, you served with him, and when you start to see people within their own you know, within the own team, having different priorities, you know, whether it's trying to promote themselves or promote their boss. We had one boss. It was the president of the United States. And quite frankly, you had to be tough. And there were people where this, you know, this normal North Carolina gentleman's way of interacting, they saw a different side. But it was not because of my agenda. It was because the president wanted it done and had to get done. But I will say, I'll give a little teaser here. The president never sleeps. You know that.
People ask me, so who's really tweeting at 4 a.m.? It's not me. It's him.
It is him. And it is him. Right. So he called me one early morning, 3:18 a.m. 3:18 calls. You know, back at that time, I had the Secret Service outside the door. And normally what I would do is I'd put my phone up about 12:30 a.m., maybe 1 a.m., you know, figuring, okay, the president's going to, you know, go on and maybe go to sleep for a little bit. Not always the case. And so I'd put it up. So knock, 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 3:18 in the morning. The Secret Service says, Chief, the boss, as we would call him, the boss would like to talk to you. So, you know, obviously I'm groggy. I get up, I answer the phone, and he says, Mark, were you up? I said, no, sir. I had to, yes, sir. I had to get up to answer the phone. Yeah. So
I'm up now.
Yeah. And so he goes and he's been thinking about things that were important that had to get done. And so I always had a little pad of paper where I'd write these things down. He would go over it. I write those things down. But now this is the kind of guy he is. So that's 3:18 in the morning. I would always get to the office very early the next morning, so 7:15 or so. I'm doing my security briefing, looking at the presidential daily briefing. By 7:30, he's on the phone. Mark, that list that I gave you, have you made any progress on it? And I said, well, sir, nobody in Washington, D.C. has come to work yet.
Right. But it's a Friday.
but I will. But he was, that was, you know, what we talked about, Trump time. He wanted to make sure he got it done.
I call it moving at the speed of Trump.
It is. It is. And that's the kind of stories that are in there. Some less, you know, Dr. Fauci kind of things where the pushback is still going on today.
Yeah.
I mean, you heard last week just some of the revelations that happened with Dr. Fauci.
Well, he was lying to Congress.
He was lying to Congress. And here's the interesting thing is if they will drill down on that, Sebastian, what they will find is emails that would indicate that at least Dr. Fauci in that testimony should have said, well, it was raised in an email to me back in 2020, but I don't think it's correct. But instead, he went after, you know, Senator Rand Paul, Senator John Kennedy, suggesting that they were somehow misinformed and it was really Dr. Fauci misleading.
Yeah. I got to respond to what you said about the things inside the building, because this will be grist to our conversation later. I only realized the depth of this issue. So a little bit of inside baseball. I was a deputy assistant to the president. So there's assistants and deputy assistants. And I had no idea what that meant. It's a pretty bloody high rank. There's only 40 in the U.S. government. And I only realized that it outstrips a three-star when I arrived at the DIA for a briefing on China. And it's like Queen Elizabeth had arrived. I mean, this red carpet comes out, VIP parking, and I'm saying, what? I just came to the conference. And so I realized it's a big deal. Then I found out there is somebody of my rank in the press team. A deputy assistant.
Yeah.
Who utterly detests the president.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought,
yeah.
What, just so you can tick it off on your resume?
Exactly.
What possesses a person? Because these are, you're not, this isn't, you know, you're not given the Queen's shilling, you're not press gang, you volunteer for a political appointment.
Right.
It's a choice, and then you choose to work for a man you politically detest. How hard was that for you that when you found these people?
Well, and they were all over the place, Sebastian. And the interesting thing is they went after those titles. You know, there was apps and daps and saps. And I had no, I'm like you, I had no idea. As a member of Congress, you come in and they said, well, you know, I want to have the DAP. You know, I want to be the deputy assistant. Right. And I didn't even know that it carried the same equivalent as the ranks in the military until I got there and realized how they were being trained. But here's the sad part about it is if they're going to work for the president of the United States, they should be buying in. And it shows how insidious this swamp is. They want it on their resume so that they can say that they had a high-ranking position so they can trade it like a baseball card for some future job.
In the swamp.
In the swamp. And then they can go out to K Street and say, all right, here's what I was in a Republican administration, and when they get interviewed by Case, well, I wasn't really for President Trump. I just, you know, I'm one of you guys, but I know all the players. Let me just tell you, it's disgusting. It makes you sick, and quite frankly, the American people, they see through that.
And the point, I don't want anybody to misunderstand what we're saying here. It's not about the man. It's not about the president. It's about the fact that 64 million Americans voted for him. And if you're a political appointee, guess what? You're supposed to be representing the agenda they voted for.
Exactly. Exactly. And so if you look back to 2016, a whole lot of people started coming in. You and I have talked about this personally. A whole lot of people started coming in. Oh, I'm with you. Some of these people were crying the night that Donald Trump actually got
Some of them would have served as cabinet members in a Hillary administration.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And so so what we did towards the end is we got very, very tight on who we would bring in. I told the president, you need to be, you know, slow to hire, quick to fire.
Yeah.
And what happened early on, and of course, he was a business guy. I mean,
what would he know about the swamp?
So you would come to the swamp and you would trust people and say, well, this is transactional. You're going to support me. That's great. Well, it doesn't happen that way in the swamp, sadly.
Yeah, and this is my bugbear. We're going to discuss it at length. I've got plans I'm going to share with the president on how we fix it. Johnny McKenty, you did a great job. 6 months, last 6 months, working for Mark, PPO, God bless you. But next
he did. Well, he was all in on MAGA. Johnny.
Right.
Johnny,
but
continued.
It was only the last
few
months.
Right.
We need
That's
people correct. Like that from day one. Back one-on-one with President Trump's former chief of staff after this break. Do you miss President Trump? I know I do. And now I'm coming to you with a very special offer from my team that you do not want to miss from President Trump. Now is your chance to enter to win one of 6 signed photographs of the president, which were hand-signed by President Trump and soon could be hanging up in your house. When President Trump signed these photographs, he wanted to make sure all of his supporters had the chance to receive one. And now is your chance. All you have to do is text PHOTO, PHOTO, to 55404 today for your chance to win a beautiful photograph of President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump, hand-signed by President Trump himself, by texting PHOTO to 55404 right now. You will get exclusive double entry activated by my team for a limited time. Again, text PHOTO to 55404 to have your name entered twice to win a hand-signed Trump photograph. You don't want to miss this. Our contest ends soon. Paid for by the National Republican Senatorial Committee.
From the ReliefFactor.com studios, this is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
And we are back one-on-one with Mark Meadows. Last month I heard you give a speech at Hillsdale.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to say it was ballsy. It was unswamp-like.
Yeah.
Because you talked about November.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You said, yeah, really? Let's talk about voter fraud. You want to see voter fraud? Come to my office at CPI, and I'll show you the ballots that are a little bit hinky.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this, because I've had it with those who say, and they're saying it to the president, oh, you've got to look forward. You can't look back. You've got to look forward. If we don't get an accurate picture of what happened last time, we can't prevent wide-scale voter fraud. So what is your diagnosis and what is your prescription for the next 2 years, Mark?
Yeah, so the prescription has to be audits more broadly than just a few contested states that have been in the news and very high profile. We need to make sure that we have audits. So those are audits that happen in states where Donald Trump was declared the winner, right, and audits in states where he wasn't declared the winner.
You know, which everybody should be in favor of.
Sure. I mean, it's all about making sure that the ballot from a Sebastian Gorka to the ballot box actually goes from you into the ballot box. It's not tampered with. It's not manipulated. And quite frankly, it's not carried by anybody else other than you to the ballot box. And we've gotten away from that. And it's legal in California. You and I have talked about this.
The harvesting.
Yeah, they'll harvest the ballots. But it's not just that aspect of it, Sebastian. Here's the other aspect. We have to make sure that the plays that were run in 2020 are not repeated in 2022 and 2024. And so when we look at audits, we have to look at forensically some of these audits. And then we have to also understand that in coming up with state legislatures, working with your state legislatures, there are over 300 bills that are out there, but we have to make sure that we get it, because there's a simultaneous play being run at the same time. Here's the other thing: it's at the same time, a few blocks from where we're recording right now is Capitol Hill, and what they want to do is they want to make sure that they have the federal government come in and tell you how it's going to be done. You know, last week they stopped a bad voter rights bill that was coming up, and they call it voter rights, but it's actually about government control,
federalization
from federal government. And and so we've got to make sure that that does not happen.
Of all of these, is there one that concerns you more? Because we have, I put them into baskets, and I'm not interested with the, you know, weird theories about computers in Venezuela. There's old school cheating that we've seen for 60 years.
Sure.
Okay, from Chicago to Philly to ballot stuffing, photocopying.
Right.
There's that old school.
Right.
Then there's the attempt to federalize under Nancy,
that's correct,
HR1,
that's
and everything
correct
else. And then the one that we just don't talk about it enough is the $500 million that was dropped by Facebook to privatize the running of elections, to have private citizens become election officers illegally. Which one are you most scared of?
So the latter one is probably the one getting the least amount of attention, and yet is the one that we need to pay attention to the most.
Right.
It's actually being addressed, hopefully, in Wisconsin as we speak.
Right.
But the real problem with that is when you start paying people to have Zucker boxes, or you have people that are actually going to be poll workers that are getting paid by a nonprofit with left-leaning tendencies, what you do is you're effectively changing the outcome. So one of the recipes, you said, well, how do you think? Well, everybody that's tuned in right now, you need to figure out in your state, and we'll be glad to help, as long as it's not on a partisan basis, the folks at CPI, we're willing to help. What are the laws? What can you do? And actually show up. I can tell you, we would, in North Carolina, we would have poll workers that would not only work on the partisan side of it, but we'd have nonpartisan poll workers, a Republican and Democrat judge at every single, and we would help them understand the law, because what happens is so many times the confidence of a Democrat operative outweighs the statutes the way that they're, and so you have to know the laws to say, you know what,
that's not the law.
That's not actually how you do it. We have it happening right now in Virginia. In Virginia, there's a lawsuit right now in Fairfax County where there's a law on the book that the registrar actually instructed those poll workers to violate, in my opinion, violate the law. Take the last four digits of the Social Security off of absentees. They're saying even now that they shouldn't do that. They also said you should have a witness for those absentee, and they said, no, you don't have to do it. Now, they've walked it back a little bit, but it's only because learned people actually got involved in Christian Adams actually filed a lawsuit. He's doing some great work in Virginia, but they will run that play over and over again, and so that's why we have to stay involved.
I've done something I can guarantee no one else in my audience has done. I've sat across the table with the man who formulated the process behind Balance of Nature, Dr. Douglas Howard, doctor, professor, scientist, one of the most brilliant health experts you'll ever meet, and I know him. When he described to me his 20-year journey that resulted in one of those powerful supplements on the market today, I knew I had to start taking it. You will probably never have the privilege of meeting Dr. Howard as I have, but you can make the same decision I did to get those 10 daily servings from 31 different fruits and vegetables, all derived from Dr. Howard's process. Believe me when I say Balance of Nature is the real deal. For a limited time, all new preferred customers receive a 35% additional discount and free shipping on your first order. Use discount code GORKA. Call 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com, promo code GORKA. That's 800-246-8751, balanceofnature.com, code GORKA.
The most awesome pipes in talk radio. Sebastian Gorka.
Welcome back to America First, one-on-one with Mark Meadows. We have so much to ask you that I'm getting texts from my producer, from my team here. Ask him about this, ask him about that. Okay, so I'm going to put my things into abeyance for a second. Ask Mark Meadows about Fauci not mentioning for months that NIH was funding the Wuhan lab.
Yeah, so Fauci, literally, when we were in the White House, you know, he was there on a regular basis, much to many people's chagrin. My wife said, if you put Dr. Fauci on the TV one more time, do not come home for dinner. You know, so it was literally that strong. But here's the problem is, daily contact with Dr. Fauci, emails that in early February would suggest that there was at least this issue of gain of function that was raised, where if he didn't read the email, he should have.
Yes.
But in that, where it was raised, but NIH, they were helping with the funding. And so in the book, we talk about this in the book. One night, I find out that we're funding this lab where the virus started, where it actually leaked from, and we're, as federal taxpayers, funding it. I said, the president's going to go, he's going to go nuts with this. Right. So I make a call to Alex Azar, and I said, Alex?
Secretary of Health.
Secretary of Health, thank you. You know, we talk in
D.C.
In
two, code.
D.C. code, too familiar. He was Secretary of HHS and responsible for the funding at NIH. I said, cut it off. Just cut it off. Well, you know, Mark, we can't really. I said, cut it off and make sure it's cut off tomorrow. And so this was late in the night. The president calls him shortly after that, having seen the same report that we're funding it, and said, Alex, cut it off. And he says, well, the chief's already called me. And he goes, what do you mean the chief's called you? And he says, well, the chief has already called about that. We're cutting it off in the morning. So the president, in his normal style, calls me and says, Mark,
is it done?
No. He says, Mark, he says, I just talked to Alex. He said, you cut off funding to the Wuhan lab. He said, I didn't tell you to do that. All right. And I go, no, sir, but you would have. And he started laughing. He said, finally, a chief of staff that thinks for himself. And he said good night. But here's the other thing. Dr. Fauci had knowledge when he testified, had knowledge when we cut off that funding, and then still had the audacity to make appeals to Secretary Azar to restart the funding. And I mean, I don't know how sick you can be when you look at holding China accountable. Yeah. They weren't even letting us in to have real data, and we were supposed to send them money.
So for me, when I arrived in the White House, I refused to use the phrase deep state until about 2 weeks later. And then I realized it's real.
Yeah.
It really, I mean, at all levels. Yeah. For me, it's not just malefactors like CIA Director Brennan, who voted for the Communist Party in the 80s. It's not just people like McCabe, who lied to his own FBI. It's people like Fauci. For me, the deep state encompasses bureaucrats who think by dint of being in D.C. for 20, 30 years, I'm more important than the elected president.
Oh, without a doubt. And that came
That's
across.
That's part of it.
Oh, that came across. And here's the second part of that. I'll give you a corollary to that. Here's what happens. Not only do they think their opinion is more important, they'll go into the president and suggest that they're all with him, mm-hmm. while at the same time going back to their agency and saying, the guy is not accurate on this. We're going to do it my way. I saw people come out of the Oval Office when I was in Congress. The president looks across, says, Mark, we're going to do X. I walk out of the Oval Office, and they said, we're not going to do
okay,
that.
So I'm going to say it now. I don't care if the Democrats know. Because this is what I'm going to tell the president. I told my boss, so I worked for Steve. Steve was the AP, I was the DAP.
Right.
And then there was the president. I told him, this administration, because of the deep state, needs a dozen or two dozen hard bastards who work in teams of two and every Monday go to a different department.
Agreed.
And they say, Mr. Secretary, what have you done in the last 7 days to affect the president's agenda?
Right.
And when they report back to the White House and it's not happening, there are ramifications because you have active subversion of the agenda of those who elected the president.
Right.
That idea was deemed, Steve liked it. Others said, you're going to rock the boat. You can't do that. DC doesn't work like that. I don't think, I want him to come back. I know he's going to run. I think if we can stop voter fraud on a mass scale, he wins in a landslide given the last 10 months of just...
Of course, yeah.
Beyond Carter-esque disaster.
Right.
But if we don't have that mechanism in place to rein in seditious elements who think, well, I'm a bureaucrat, therefore, or say yes to the president and then do the reverse when they get back to their departments, it's all for naught. So am I being an extremist?
No, actually, if anything, you're implementing a plan that should have been implemented early on in the first term. I can tell you, Johnny McAtee, you mentioned him earlier, and I actually had this whole org chart of every single agency and where it was and what it was and who's going to go in. And as we started to look at that, had the plans for after November, fully expecting that we were going to actually send a lot of people home. Well, let me phrase it this way. Ask them to use their talents elsewhere.
Right.
But we're going to have to be aggressive with it. The current laws make it very hard to fire federal employees.
But you can move a department to Alaska.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
So having that exactly done is something that must be done in the next administration.
As far as I'm concerned, and look, everybody has their issues. The right to life, First Amendment, the border, national security. I'm very clear on this. I don't care what you think is the most important issue. If we don't seriously deal with the question of a subversive permanent bureaucracy, the rest doesn't matter.
Without a doubt. Because what we've essentially done is no matter who's in the Oval Office, it's bureaucrats in the swamp that are controlling everything. And we'll continue. You know, everybody says, well, you know, you're the president. You brought in your whole team. Well, there are millions of people that they don't move, whether it's a Democrat or Republican. The political appointees come in, and a lot of times the bureaucrats say, listen, we're going to be here long after you're gone. And they just wait them out. Yeah. Just wait them out.
It's truly shocking. The book is The Chief's Chief. You can order it now. It's by a new publishing house that is anti-swamp, that is freedom of speech. It's pro-MAGA, pro-America First. What are they called?
All Seasons Press.
All Seasons Press. Follow him at Mark Meadows. Also CPI.org, where he is senior partner. But the book you have, perfect Christmas present, guys, is The Chief's Chief. You have all helped build MyPillow into the amazing company it is today. Now, Mike has an amazing offer for my listeners on his standard MyPillows. You will receive a standard MyPillow regularly $69.98, now only $19.98. You'll also receive deep discounts on all MyPillow products, such as the MyPillow towels, mattress topper, my slippers, and so much more. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener square to receive Mike's standard pillow for just $19.98 or call 1-800 800-829-8468. Promo code G-O-R-K-A. MyPillow is made in the USA. Comes with a 10-year warranty, so you know it's going to last. And a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. It's time to start getting the quality sleep you deserve. Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-829-8468. Use promo code G-O-R-K-A to take advantage of Mike's special offer on his standard MyPillow. That's MyPillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A, 1-800-829-8468.
You're listening to America First with Dr. G.
And welcome back to One-on-One with Mark Meadows. Let's get serious for the last few minutes. The last few months haven't just been disastrous for all Americans. They've been incredibly disturbing, because what we are witnessing, whether it's the grandmothers in solitary for 6 months because of a trespass charge for January the 6th, or whether it's Steve Bannon on a criminal congressional contempt charge, or whether it's parents being labeled domestic terrorists because they don't want their children to be taught bigotry. I think what we're witnessing is the criminalization of conservatism. Do you think that's an exaggeration?
No, it's not an exaggeration. I think the other is there's a strong desire to make sure your voice and my voice and voices like them across the country, that they go silent. And that's what this is all about. It's about making sure that the conservative voice is not out there. And I can tell you, I travel all over this country and I see, you know, freedom-loving patriots from coast to coast. And even some of those freedom-loving patriots, and they get a little shy about speaking up,
yes.
You know, and they're not, and they, you know, they'll say something in private, or they'll come up and whisper to me in my ear, you know, you tell the boss to keep going. But they're afraid to speak up, you know, in their churches or their places of business or their communities. And that's what this is designed to do. That's why what you're doing is so important. I'm there, Lori, with your listeners.
Yeah.
I watch. So I'm there in the green room literally last week, while it was right after
Thursday night.
Yeah, right after the town hall. So you're going on TV. I'm there about to go on TV to give an analysis of the town hall. I'm there talking to my good friend, actually my best friend, Jim Jordan. And we're talking, and the volume's off and the monitor's there, and I'm just going, what a terrible idea it is. What, you know, it was the worst hour and a half of TV I've ever seen. You know, you're talking about your country and what you're losing. And we turn around and there you are with the volume off. And we could just tell from your facial expressions and reading your lips. And Jim goes, he's saying the same thing that you are. And so here's the other thing. Jim made a statement. He says, we need more people willing to speak up just like that, that are willing to do that in the public square, because if we don't, those freedoms, whether it's First Amendment, Second Amendment, or anything else, Fourth Amendment, we will lose those. And hopefully we won't. So thanks for speaking up.
Well, thank you, Mark. You're doing exactly the same thing. That speech at Hillsdale, I'm going to track it down. I'm going to talk to Larry and we're going to post it. It's the biggest lesson of the last 18 months, not just the elections, not just the Trump years, it's COVID. It's the lack of courage, and all of us have to cleave to the truth. Never, ever censor yourself. Super excited about the presidency platform, Truth Social. But at the end of the day, it's what you do every day with your friends, your colleagues, just out and about. Never, ever censor yourself, because we have a republic to save. I want to thank you for everything you've done. The book is The Chief's Chief. It is out in time for Christmas. Order it right now. Follow this man at Mark Meadows. And just to say thank you, we have our new America First merch store, and it matches your suit.
Mark. So, no, hold on. Let me get it on right now.
Oh, look at that. Look at that, guys. That is perfect. You know where to get yours, right, guys? As ever, keep your head on a swivel, watch your six, hold the line, never give up, never give in, and stay frosty.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.